No matter how many times we've visited Spring Mountain, we always come back for more. After a lengthy trip up the mountain on a single-lane road, you learn the value of keeping your eyes peeled. And with that, you learn the value of sipping and spitting after a tasting, especially when you have to make the trip back down. On this trip, I visited with Elizabeth Marston, one of the owners of Marston Family Vineyard, the other owners being her brother, mother, and father. Once again, Napa family reigns. We were joined by her friendly pal Tucker, who occasionally pops up in the background. Hospitality and warmth keeps visitors coming back to Napa, and this visit was no exception. But the fact is, for Elizabeth and company, it's all about the wine. I'm here with Elizabeth Marston of Marston Family Vineyard. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. How can you not be? The sun is screaming outside.
It's a gorgeous day. Harvest is in swing out there. Great to have you here.
Thank you. I guess my first question is, how high are we on Spring Mountain?
We are about halfway up the mountain. So ranging from about 1,100 to 1,500 feet. The top of Spring Mountain is about 2,200 feet.
And in terms of the property you have, the vineyards, how many acres are we looking at?
So planted about 45 acres. The ranch is about 500 acres. Lucky timing. My parents came up here in the late 60s and found this old ranch.
And it was a winery going back to the 1800s, correct?
It was a vineyard going back to the late 1800s, planted by the Cram family, by Horst and Plough. And they planted, I think, around 20 acres by Horst and Plough. And we had actually some of the first drip irrigation up here from that. Most of it was dry farm, but there was some drip put in. And then the horse farm was converted to a winery in the 50s. And then we've been making wine here since the 70s.
How much lower on the mountain do the vineyards go that you have?
So the lower vineyard, I think that's about 1,000 feet up. So we're 100% Cabernet now, Cabernet Sauvignon. We had 11 varietals when my parents first came up here. Everything from Pinot Blanc and Grenache and Petite Syrah and the whole gamut, you know, really dating back to old Napa, where people planted what they liked without thinking about what should be grown, you know, in certain sites and microclimates. And then we replanted in the 90s, and we went to Merlot, Cabernet, and Syrah. And the last 4 years, we went 100% Cabernet.
Wow, that's very cool.
Yeah, so we like to joke that it took us 40 years and we're finally focused.
About time you figured it
out. Yeah, no rush. We don't want to rush into anything.
Well, and you're very excited talking about the white we're drinking, so I'm going to let you go ahead and explain that it's the name is Albion, correct?
Yes. And so this is our first white wine since 1987, I want to say, late 80s. We only did about 150 cases. And we really felt that we wanted to have a companion white to the cab and something for guests to enjoy here. And, you know, our family life really centers around the dinner table. So it's really, you know, adds another dimension to be able to have a white wine. And it's something we really enjoy, too. And Albion is my great-great-grandfather's name, Albion Marston. And it plays homage to old world and new world kind of melding together. He was living over in England. And Albion was a term they used for the United Kingdom. And then Sir Francis Drake, when he came to the Bay Area, declared it New Albion. And it reminded him of the cliffs of Dover, the white cliffs there, the whole Bay Area. So we thought that was kind of a fun spin on it. We're here, we're doing the old world, you know, white Bordeaux, classic style, but made with new world fruit, 100%, you know, California fruit, so.
I like how you say California with that excitement behind it. Just for our listeners in the background, Tucker, the 2-year-old white lab, is having a good time. So I just want to kind of point that out in case you're wondering, what the heck is going on?
He is having, I think, too much fun.
Yeah, he's a great little dog. Great big dog. Medium dog. For our listeners, can you explain exactly what a white Bordeaux is?
Absolutely. It's the classic blend in Bordeaux of a Sauvignon Blanc and Semillon. Typically, it's about 30% Semillon. And what that does, it really, you know, you can have this wonderful Sauvignon Blanc and it has sometimes some of the green flavors or it's very crisp or, you know, really high acidity. And the Semillon is this grape you don't see very often by itself. Typically, if you do see it by itself, it's a late harvest and it's a dessert wine. And so what it does with the Sauvignon Blanc, it kind of takes off, it rounds it off. It takes off those kind of edges and it gives it this wonderful mid-palate, longer finish. And it can handle a little oak. So we barrel fermented our Semillon, and that really helps it, that you can age it a little bit more than you would a classic Sauvignon Blanc.
And this is a 2009, so...
So very young, brand new.
Okay. Yeah. And the process on that, as far as how you go about that?
So this we picked a little later than you would normally pick Sauvignon Blanc. We wanted the sugars to be a little higher and absolutely no green flavors, just for this style. I love, you know, that traditional New World Sauvignon Blanc as well, but just not in this particular project. And then the Semillon came in probably about 3 weeks later, and that was barrel fermented. And then we did the blending about 6 weeks before bottling. And we originally thought, you know, we're going to do the 30% Semillon. That's what, you know, the classic traditional style is. And it goes to show how different, you know, New World California fruit is, where you really have to adapt your methods and whatnot to the fruit at hand. And we decided, you know, and we sat down with our winemaker, and I was convinced we were going to do 30%. I was like, oh, we don't even really need to do the blending session. And our winemaker said, well, humor me, let's do this. So the whole family sat down, and we had glasses ranging from 30% down to 1% Semillon. And it was all out of sequence. You weren't kind of having this preconceived notion of what you were going to like, because I was convinced. And this was everybody's favorite, and it's 4% Semillon.
Really?
So
4%?
A very different, you know, blend than we originally anticipated. And some of that's just, yeah, you know, kind of the vintage and what the fruit was like that year, and kind of what we were trying to accomplish. And I remember growing up, my mother always said that, you know, that's the magic, kind of the alchemy of blending, where 2% can be perfect, 3% can be too much. And you just hit that sweet spot and you stay, you know, you don't push it. And we found the sweet spot with 4%.
I love that your mom told you that. This goes back to what we talk about. One of the things about our site is always comes back to that one word, family.
Absolutely.
And I love that it's in the name of your wine on your label. And you grew up here.
I did, yes.
What's it like to grow up at 1,000, 1,500 feet, whatever it might be?
You definitely, you make shopping lists when you go to town. You don't, you know, if you forget milk and whatnot, and you say, that's okay, I don't need it, well, you know, get it next time. But it's really fun, you know, grew up here with, we had horses and chickens and barn cats, and just, my dad and I always, you know, would always do the vegetable garden together, and you're really in touch with the seasons, you know, particularly centered around the vineyard, and you kind of market, you know, when, bud break and pruning and everything, it was, you know, harvest is such a meaningful time on so many levels, kind of even looking for that all year, everything centers around that.
I lost my train of thought, but I am going to cut a slice of cheese because it's calling my name.
Oh, you have to. Should I pour the cap? Nothing like food and wine together.
That's the way to do it.
Mm, absolutely.
This is very creamy.
Especially when we get to the cab, you'll really see that, you know, mountain cab really is complemented with a little food. It's a powerful, powerful guy.
What is this again?
That's that Comté, a French Gruyère.
It's a Gruyère. No wonder I'm getting it, but it's not the stinky real Gruyère that I'm used to.
No, it's this kind of creamy... Mm. Slightly salty, but not too.
Not at all. That's very good. Okay, I should get back to work here. I'm going to actually stop.
I could talk about cheese for a while, too.
Have you guys done your own cheese up here at all? Or?
No, we've never, nothing quite like that. More kind of on the consumption level.
I know about the consumption thing. I don't make wine, but.
Well, actually, the Comté was my dad's, the end result of my dad spending a good few months on a mission to find the perfect cheese for our cab. And he really, I think, was having quite a bit of fun with it. So he drew out the process. And every night, you need to have his glass of cab and try a different cheese, and got to know all the cheesemongers in town and the farmer's market. And now, even today, I can't walk into Sunshine or Dean DeLuca without the cheese guy saying, we do have the Comté. Tell your dad. You know, he gets very upset when we're out of stock.
Oh, your dad sounds like a very interesting guy.
He is.
And you talked about your mom being so involved in things. Mm-hmm. Are they both still involved in the process, in the business at all right now?
Absolutely. Actually, the way my dad set it up, which I thought was pretty forward-thinking, he set it up so that my parents, my brother and I, the four Marstons, we're all equal partners. So all big decisions we do together, and then I do the day-to-day operations. But we really, you know, like doing the white, you know, we didn't rush into it, clearly. We took our time. But it was a really thoughtful process. And my dad's always said that the synergy of teamwork and input is what has kind of been the secret to the family's success. That kind of a very thoughtful process where everybody's input is valued.
That's a telephone ringing in the background. We'll let that go for a moment. The white with the cheese is really amazing. Mm. And I haven't even got to the Cabernet yet, which I'm definitely getting ready for. But the blending process, and you were talking about the different percentages, and that is truly objective the way you're doing it.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And you said, you know, the winemaker said, humor me. And if I had a nickel for every time I've heard a winemaker tell somebody to humor me and what comes from it, it's not even the winemaker's fingers on the process. Mm. It's strictly, it's everybody's who's involved.
Absolutely.
So is all the family involved in that process?
Yes. You know, the big things that everybody, you know, gets, there are many aspects, you know, we love it's, you know, it's a life, it's a, you know, 365 days a year, process. But what people really, really enjoy is harvest and blending. So I always make sure that we, you know, as much as possible, everybody's there. And my brother's wife and my husband, they love it as well. So all six of us will get together with our team, and it's a really fun thing to do together.
Now, your husband is involved in the winery, but not heavily involved, or?
We live up here on the property at the vineyard here. His day job takes him into real estate, but he has such a passion for the wine industry, and he's really found that particularly his favorite side of it is the viticulture. So he loves being heavily involved in that, and we got to do a lot together, really launching the white together. We just picked the 2010 harvest in September, and he really ran point on that, and I got to almost show up on harvest morning. It was a pretty neat feeling. So more and more, we're kind of learning and evolving together, and, you know, the next generation really kind of continuing that for, you know, the third generation when they come along. I want to preserve that and keep the business evolving so that it's viable and exciting. So
your brother, what position does he and his wife fill?
So, well, he's a partner. His day job, he's a lawyer in San Francisco. So we joke he's our in-house legal counsel. And he actually gives tremendous advice. We're predominantly growers, so on different contracts and whatnot, I always run everything by him. And he, honestly, within the family, he probably has the best palate of any of us next to our winemaker. And so we always, when we do it, we, you know, always kind of try to see what other people are doing, neighbors, you know, other cabs we love in the valley, and we'll do blind tastings as a family. One, because it's really fun to do, and two, it's really interesting to keep learning and seeing what other folks are doing and getting to enjoy all the great wines that people are producing in Napa. So we make sure that everybody's always involved with that, and, you know, if there's anything we can learn from them. Because that's, you know, as I was saying earlier, where Napa's such a young wine region that we're really just on the very tip of where, you know, the opportunities and possibilities of where we can go.
If I remember correctly what I'd read, your parents started here in 1969, was that right?
Yep. They were married in 66, bought the ranch in 69.
That was a crazy time, just a few short years away from when everything broke open.
Absolutely. And a lot of that too is, you know, as many of these things in life, it was timing. And they really lucked out, and they originally invested with a few other couples, and they came up to the property, and, you know, none of the roads were paved. It was, the houses were really in need of some TLC. They were built in the 30s, and not much had been done to them since then. And they just fell in love with this old ranch, and then bought out the other partners. And then next thing they know, it's 1976 and the first Paris tasting, and the whole face of Napa changed. You know, originally we had a lot of plum trees up here, because the owner was like, you know, really loved growing grapes and producing wine, but he wasn't 100% convinced. So we had these sheds to dry out prunes. So it was either going to be grapes or prunes from the ranch. And I'm so happy it was grapes.
Me too.
It would be a very different conversation today.
Yeah, I would imagine. Not nearly as romantic.
No. Yeah.
But for your parents, I mean, have you ever had that conversation with your dad, especially when Sideways came out? And again, there was, and I guess to a degree, Bottle Shock. Gee, Dad, what was it like to live through that period where all of a sudden you guys were on the map and everybody were giving you the respect that was due? I mean,
I think, you know, he definitely is very honest about it. And he said it was a very different time. You know, little sleepy St. Helena had, you know, one hardware store, and they really loved it the way it was then. And it's fun to see it evolve. You know, everybody talks about too, that things that really changed the landscape was the 76 Paris tasting, and then also phylloxera hitting the valley, where that really, you know, as I was saying, up here at our ranch, we actually were very lucky. We didn't have phylloxera, even though we did have some ARX1 rootstock and whatnot, predominantly St. George, but we did have a little bit. we weren't hit with it, but we realized that what was being grown here wasn't necessarily the best fit with the land and our little microclimate. And so people said that really gave Napa focus. I think that's very true for us as well. And as my dad says, you know, cab is king, and, you know, really discovered that this was a magical place to grow Cabernet, Napa Valley and Spring Mountain in particular.
And you have kind of a tight-knit group of people up here, don't you?
We do. We all really like each other and are really supportive of one another and very proud of each other's accomplishments.
And I think probably more than anywhere, there is, I'm thinking about this, it's almost mostly family up here, isn't it?
It is. Yep. Majority.
Yeah.
Most, just about everybody, actually.
I'm kind of running it through my head because we've interviewed several people, and I'll be meeting with Barnett later in the week.
Terrific. I love
really,
their wines.
Really excited to talk with David because
great things over there.
Yeah, very impressive stuff.
He really is.
I think we've got a lot of you guys up here because we've gotten the Smith Brothers.
Terrific.
Pride.
Uh-huh.
Sam Baxter over at...
Tara Valentine.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Spring Mountain is a very special place.
And it's old. That's the other thing that's interesting.
There's a lot of history up here.
Well, I think when people think of the Valley, especially 76, they look at the Valley floor. They look at, you know, Mondavi. They look at ABV, that kind of thing. But up here in the mountains, there was some pretty important stuff going on.
Yeah. Well, as we were talking about before, you know, the reason there's so much history up here on Spring Mountain is all the natural water sources. You know, we're completely off the grid on our own water system. Our property alone, we have 4 natural springs and a stream. And, you know, people are always settled where there's water for farming, for day-to-day life. And you really find that. There's a lot of history. And we like to joke, too, that on Spring Mountain, you know, you get a lot of characters. You know, it's much harder to grow grapes and live in the mountains. And so you get in a certain kind of character. And we really like that. You know, it's a little tougher, but... You know, a little harder on the grapes, but you get this exceptional quality, and it's worth it.
Now, I'm curious, and this is, again, a little off script, more of a personal question, but seeing how you grew up here, do you go into the city very often? Is it up? You're up here for a week or two at a time? I mean...
The city is in San Francisco or St. Helena?
No, just down to St. Helena.
I consider that the city, sorry.
But, I mean, I know it's, you know, it's an effort to do that. I mean, it's not a hop, skip, and a jump. It's not that far away.
You get used to it. Oh, some days, you know... We'll go down, you know, a couple times in a day. And then you'll find some days where it's just busy up here and you haven't been down there in a little bit. You might need to restock your supplies. And
or you have a day like today where you just kind of walk outside saying, yeah, I don't need any of that.
When I got out of my...
We love it. We really do. You can see, you know, every star at night. And it's a special place. We love Spring Mountain and our little part of Spring Mountain.
So let me get back to where we're going to talk about your brother. So he's a lawyer. Is he in San Francisco?
He is, yeah.
But yet he still is involved with...
Heavily involved, absolutely. And they're up pretty much every weekend. You know, this is a passion for them. They both love wine. And so, yeah, they're here on a regular basis. Yeah.
So tell me about the Cabernet.
So this is our brand new release, our 2007 Cabernet. And we only make 500 cases. And it's 100% cab, all here from the family vineyard. And you definitely, you know, you get a lot of the Spring Mountain characteristics, that intense, wonderful complexity, long, long finish. You know, kind of those tannins are present but integrated, and it, you know, this will cellar a long time. And it's still, you know, it's a young wine. And it's still, you know, I'm decanting it because it's a big guy.
How long did you have it open for?
About maybe 45 minutes before you came. And it's still a young, young guy.
Yeah, but it's good. It's really good. You know, you kind of identify that Spring Mountain fruit, at least. That's one thing I'm able to pick up. I don't know if I'd ever be able to do it blind.
Mm.
But that's really nice. Wow. And I did forget one question, too, going back to the White Bordeaux. Mm. How many cases do you make of that?
150.
Okay, good. And that's, is that strictly wine club? Is that distributed at
Winery
all?
Winery direct. Not distributed. There might be one or two accounts that we're talking to that might get the exclusive. But otherwise, we really want to keep it for, share it with our mailing list and one year direct. And the family's definitely been drinking quite a bit of it ourselves. We're doing our share. That's always the best sign when you find yourself reaching for it.
Well, that's the thing that I always find fascinating too. And I don't get to the question all the time about your own private cellar of your own wine. Mm. That's got to be something after a while, vintage after vintage. Do you ever get tempted just go down there and crack one just for fun and, you know, just...
Oh, we always do over, you know, birthdays and holidays. Yeah. We'll reach in and pull something special out. We had, actually recently, we had an 85 cab, and that was made by Andrei Telichev here in this barn. You know, you see the old pictures here, you know, bare light bulbs. It was really rustic winemaking. And it's still there. It's still got the fruit on it. And it was really, really fun to see that cellar worthiness. And, you know, definitely it's probably ready to drink now. Yeah. I'm not sure if it's going to keep going. But
what a great experience that's got to be. How much fun was that?
Oh, it was really special. And that was, you know, the wines we worked on when my brother and I were little. We were hanging onto the back of the gondolas, pulling grapes or leaves out of the grape bins. And it was all by hand.
What a great way to grow up. In a farming atmosphere, but something completely different. Mm-hmm. Anything but traditional, but yet in many ways very traditional.
Mm, absolutely, yeah.
That's fantastic. Sounds like you went away for a while. You weren't involved with wine. You came from a book publishing background, is that right?
Exactly, yeah. I went away. I studied something completely different undergraduate. I was kind of a literary focused. I was in classical studies. And then I went into book publishing in Manhattan for about 3 years. And then came back. And still, you know, I wanted to kind of get my work experience and my feet wet in the workaday world elsewhere. I knew I wanted to kind of really have that skill set and be able to bring that to the table and truly be hired on merit. So I was down in San Francisco for about 2 years working in the other side of publishing. That was at a publishing house. In New York, it was at a literary agency. And I just loved it. And, you know, finally going on 6 years now full time. With the family. And then as of this January, I took over all the day-to-day operations. Our wonderful general manager retired after 12 years with the winery, 18 years with the family. You know, she's a special, special person, a family member, truly. You know, read at our wedding and all of that. So it's been fun. It's definitely, it's really exciting to kind of think what the next chapter holds.
It's great to watch your face because I could see you traveling down memory lane while you're telling that. So your future is in wine.
Absolutely.
That's terrific. Yeah. Now you have another label.
Yes, a little project my brother and I did. Mm-hmm. We didn't get too far out of the box. We named it Elizabeth John. and it's teeny tiny. You know, everything is 1 to 2 barrels. So it's all, you know, winery direct and mainly, you know, it's... Our friends are the first one, you know, first access. And then if we have anything left, we'll get to share it with the winery guests.
If there's anything left.
But it's been really, really fun to do together. And the first project was back in with the 04, and it's just a slightly different part of the vineyard. And that was 2 barrels. And we used the Vinolock, the glass cork from Germany. And that, you know, we bottled that all by hand and, you know, kind of an ode to how the family used to do it. You know, all our friends were put on the bottling line. It was all hand bottling, and everybody took home a case of wine at the end of the day.
Can I be on your bottling line, please?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And then we started, I got the itch to make some more Elizabeth John. We call it EJ in-house. We call it our next-gen wine. And it's an opportunity, too. You know, I do a lot of things in the Valley with focusing on the next generation of... in wine families, of wine drinkers and trade. We actually started a group about 5 years ago called NG, the Next Generation in Wine. And we now have 18 member wineries, and we're having a ball. We get together about once a month and meet and we put on 2 big events a year together. One is right before Premier Napa Valley, and so that's focusing on the next generation in trade. And we do a tasting with our wines, and you have to be, kind of the basic requirement is that you need to be full-time with your family winery. So we really get to share that experience of working for the family. And it creates a very kind of a comfort zone where you can ask questions and get to learn from each other and share the journey of it.
That's awesome. Is that in one big group? Is it broken down?
It's one big group.
And about how many people would that be?
So 18 member wineries. We have, some members have one child to, I think the most has 4. So it's a membership by the winery.
And that's a fantastic idea.
We have so much fun with that. And we've really gotten to know each other very well. You know, when we first started the group 5 years ago, only a few of us were married. And now at meetings, people are, you know, showing off, you know, engagement rings and babies. And it's really been fun to kind of grow up together with that. Because I had gone away and to be able to reconnect, and other people had that same experience. So it's kind of bringing us all together the way our parents were.
So. That's great. I didn't get a chance to toast you. Cheers.
Oh, cheers.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
And that sharing and that help of new businesses is very unique. Not a lot of people do that.
It certainly is. Well, you know, kind of too, going back to you were mentioning the Napa Vintners, and they've really helped unify all of us as, you know, Napa Valley as an appellation, promoting Napa as a whole, and truly showing us that, you know, one person's success and whatnot is, it really reflects on everybody and kind of being a part of that. And we have that, you know, where Spring Mountain is a sub-appellation of Napa Appellation, and really getting to see, like, you know, we all succeed when you know, when your next door neighbor does. So it's really, it's exciting.
I would agree.
Yeah.
Do you think there's something special about Spring Mountain fruit?
Absolutely. I might be a little biased, though.
Just a little bit. Where could people find your wine?
So we are distributed, even though we're teeny tiny 500 cases, we are distributed in about 10 markets across the country. So in New York, we focus predominantly restaurants, a little retail here and there, but because we're so small, not too much retail, but New York, Texas, Chicago, Florida, the Bay Area predominantly, since that's our backyard, LA, and North Carolina.
And as far as our listeners go, if they were interested in finding out more about you, how would they do that?
Our website, which we actually just redid. And you really get a sense of the family and the place. So I definitely encourage people to go to marstonfamilyvineyard.com.
And if they wanted to take a tour, would they contact you through the website then? Or
through the website or calling the winery office? Absolutely. Yeah, we do tours by appointment. And we really look forward to sharing. We call it our hidden spot on Spring Mountain. We love getting to share that.
This is an incredible space.
You know, wine really is about place and people, I feel. So we got to share that with you today and with the listeners.
Well, thank you very much. Elizabeth,
thank
it's been
you
a total
much.
Pleasure. Thank you. You can find Marston Family Vineyard on the web at marstonfamilyvineyard.com.